It's LeeDavy at CalvinAir.com today, and my guest is Patrick Leonard. How's life, Patrick?
Good, yeah. My girlfriend's been away for the last 10 days or so, so I'm looking after the dogs, looking after the chickens, looking after after Vegas 2 months, I'm kind of back down to earth, I guess. Yeah.
Back down to earth with a bang. I like it. Let's start by explaining to the people who don't really know so much about BitB staking. Just tell us a little bit about what it is.
Right. Well, first of all, I had a blog called BitB. It was called like Best in the Business. I was like I was playing $1 heads up sit and goes about 10 years ago, I guess.
Mm.
And I said that one day I wanted to be like ranked number one in the world, but I was just kind of like 16, 17, 18 year old kid who was just like had like $20 bankroll or whatever. But I really loved the game, and the name kind of stuck. Like it was kind of like ironic. Like everyone used to call me BitB because I was like very, very far away from being the best in the business.
Right.
But everyone called me BitB because it was like kind of an ironic name. When I met friends or when I started to get better at poker, my friends who the kind of group I got together with, who I'd discuss hands with and I'd travel with and stuff, they were all like the best players in the world. So we decided that we had this method where we could teach anyone to be profitable in tournaments, because there's a few things you can do to just, it's very hard to lose if you like follow, let's say, like 10 like strict rules.
Mm.
So we decided to take on some like test horses and try it out. So we took on some guys who were like losing or like average, like small winners. And we quickly made them into like medium stakes winners. And we didn't really have a name. And we decided, let's do this kind of properly. Let's think of a name. And we thought for days and months and weeks for a good name. Fido Holtz was kind of part of the whole thing too. And we just couldn't think of a name. And eventually I was always trying to push BitB because I thought it's like quite a good name, like best in the business. Like there's a lot of stake in firms and stuff. So we decided to just go with the name BitB for that reason. I think it kind of rolls off the tongue like decently well. Like I think it's been quite successful in terms of helping our brand kind of get bigger, I guess. So.
And why, going back to the roots of this, what was the purpose? So if we look at BitB as a business, yeah? So, you know, you've got businesses out there where the main primary business is profit. There's others that they want to change the world, lots of different reasons. What was the main driving force and the other reasons behind why you created BitB?
We started to kind of get like, it's very tough to grind on like smaller days, like Wednesdays, Mondays, Fridays, where like first place in tournaments is like 5,000, 6,000. Mm. And then you play on a Sunday where your total buy-ins all come to like 25,000, or you play WCoop where your Sunday buy-ins come to 50,000. So keeping motivation for those smaller days was quite tough.
Mm.
But we definitely didn't want to leave the game. Like we all love the game so much. It's the only thing we really are super, super passionate about. So we decided like we wanted to still be involved and do other stuff, but we can still have the high kind of action, high stakes action. We just need to have like 50 guys who are all playing for us, you know, then we still have the sweat. We still enjoy it. And we tried to do everything as profitable as possible. Like we tried to be as professional as possible, but we don't really do it for the money. Like it sounds kind of stupid, but like when a guy wins, like say 100K, really don't think like, oh wow, I've just got 30K from this or whatever. I just think like, oh wow, I'm so happy for the guy. We kind of make the guys like our friends. We are all like one kind of, it sounds so cliche and people say this and it's kind of cringy, but we all kind of all like one big family, one big community.
Mm.
Every year we take all the guys away on holidays. Like we went to Marbella, took all the guys away. We went to Barcelona, Budapest, Prague, all these places. We go away together, like all the guys, or 20, 30, 40 guys, we'll all go away and we will go go-karting, or we'll go swimming, or we will do things not connected to poker at all. Play football, all kinds of stuff. And everyone kind of wants everyone to do well.
Mm.
So when you see a guy, let's just say there's like a Brazilian guy who's really tried hard, he's come all the way to Marbella to come and see you for 2 or 3 days, and you know he doesn't have too much money, and then he wins a Sunday Million for like 200K, you know like how much that means to him. And without trying to sound like big-headed or anything, it doesn't mean that much to me that I'm getting like 60K or whatever from the score.
Mm.
But I know like the 150K he's going to get is such a huge thing.
Mm.
And being able to see people transition from like small stakes guys or mid stakes guys dream to actually like living their dream and traveling the world and being able to buy their parents' houses from stuff that I've taught them. That's kind of like a really motivating thing for me, I guess, to like make other people's dreams come true in a way, which sounds like really cringy, I understand, but it does. That is kind of one of the biggest drives for all of us.
No, I totally get that. I'm in the same business where I help people quit alcohol. And it's just all about just seeing someone turn their life around and being a part of that. So I totally get that. But back in the poker boom days, these type of staking houses where everybody gets together and works together as a team and all these horses and stuff, they were springing up like hotcakes, and some of them were doing really well and some of them weren't. And then today, you know, you look at the narrative that's being talked about throughout media, and they say that it's harder now to win at poker than ever before. So why is now the right time for BitB staking to be doing this? Why now? Because a lot of people would look at it and not want to touch it with a barge pole.
I mean, like most, everyone says that staking's the easiest thing to do. There's nobody who was staking like 5 years ago who are still staking now. Like nobody stands the test of time. Like staking's probably the toughest thing to possibly do. Being able to like spot talent, manage talent, improve talent, do all the nitty gritty small things, like see problems before they are problems, stuff like that. It's basically, I would say it's like 1 in 1,000 that you can actually make like a staking firm work. And all these kind of staking firms who were around 5 years ago, the big stakers who had all the horses and all the big WPTs, EPTs, they all went broke, they all lost money. I think the way that we do it is we don't do it to gamble so much. Like people in the past, let's say they had 5 horses and they took them around the world with them, living in big hotels and going to Vegas for 2 months and all that kind of thing. They kind of did it for the gamble. They were wanting to just chase, try to get $1 million score kind of thing. Each month they would lose or win like 500K, and it would be like a huge kind of emotional roller coaster, which is really hard to manage for themselves and for the horses. The way that we do it is that it's a lot smaller. We have more guys. We can't really lose. Like, we've never had a losing month before. We're not really going and putting people in like 100Ks or 25Ks or even 10Ks in your handful of guys we can play. We're kind of more everyone. I think it's our duty to give each guy a chance to win every month. You know, like if you put a guy in EPTs every month and that's all they do and play like high stakes on Sundays, their like chances of winning in the year is something like 20%. I posted this on Twitter, but I said next year in the WSOP, anybody who goes, I will offer them even odds that they have a profitable series, because it's against the odds for every single player, no matter who you are. Fido Holtz, Jason Kuhn, Isaac Paxton, if they go to Vegas, they're less than 50% chance to have a winning series. So when you think about guys who were staking people just to do this kind of thing, basically more than 50% of the time their guys would lose. In the kind of system we do it, our guys are probably, you know, like 75%, 80% chance to have like a winning month. You know, like we give them good game selections, we give them good tools, we give them good coaching, good analysis, good feedback. Everything's designed for them to have like as low a variance as possible as you can have in MTTs, whereas most staking firms previously were designed for the opposite. They were designed for high variance gambling and punting, and that's never going to work. It's always going to end in tears.
I was listening to the Chris Moorman podcast he did with Remco, I think it was, because obviously Chris is one of the stories of woe, isn't it, when it comes to backing stables that went wrong and how damaging that they could be for the person who's running them. And Chris said that one of the problems he had was all his group, his horses, if you like, they were almost like become his friends, and he found it really difficult to drop them, I guess, and make professional decisions because he had those relationships. And you just spoke about the importance and the community of BitB staking. Have you ever thought about that? Have you had a problem in the past about having to separate being one big gang and also being professional and having to make the big choices and let people go?
Yeah, but what we do is every kind of quarter, like 4 times a year, we'll meet up, go to like a conference room in London or wherever else. We actually used Party Poker offices last time. And we'll sit down and we'll analyze every single guy. The kind of like manager of our stable, like the general manager, he'll spend like 2 or 3 weeks preparing like PDF files on every single guy, and then he'll present them to us on like a presentation board, and he'll show us each guy, and we'll go through like 50, 60 different things, loads of different stats, volume. Every coach will give, so we have like 15 coaches. Every coach will give like a sentence or a paragraph about every single guy. So we have so much data points. And then usually it's clear as day. Someone should get moved up, someone should get moved down, someone should get dropped, or someone should stay where they are. And we write like a PDF file ourselves and we present it to the actual hall. So they know that four times a year they're going to get feedback.
Mm.
And let's say in January, I tell the guy that, okay, we're going to keep you where you are now. To move up, you need to do X, Y, and Z. And if you don't do this, then you'll either stay where you are or move down. It then gives them like a goal. They know what to kind of go to, what to kind of strive towards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if in 4 months' time or 3 months' time, we do another meeting and we see they haven't progressed, we can just say, look, X, Y, and Z, it's very clear. It's black and white. You haven't done what we said, you know. And unfortunately, we'll have to either end the arrangement or you'd have to really improve in the next 1 or 2 months. Otherwise, we'll have to end the arrangement, I guess.
It just sounds like a really solid business plan, which makes me think, as you're going about doing this and as it's just evolved over time, Patrick, do you find yourself like gravitating towards business books or business training courses and marketing seminars and stuff to try to like increase your business acumen, as it were, to make bee-staking even more proficient?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in poker, everyone thinks the best way to improve is to watch videos and stuff. Like, I've always thought the best way to learn in poker is kind of to do things and to intuitively learn as you go along. In business, I kind of am thinking the same thing. Like, I think it's quite good to learn from your mistakes in ways.
Mm.
And because we have so many different things going on, there's marketing, there's data analysis, there's player management, there's staff management, there's literally everything you could imagine in a startup company, or even more. We're lucky enough to get involved in here and to learn from. So I'm kind of learning as I go along, I guess. Definitely made some huge mistakes in the past. Hired some people I shouldn't have hired, or managed some people I shouldn't have managed, or not move someone down as quickly as I should have done, or not been as brutally as honest as I should have been, stuff like that, or sometimes being too nice or not nice enough, etc., etc. So definitely learn as I go along. I do read some books and stuff, but in general, I prefer to maybe read like a blog or something. Like maybe someone like Fido posts like a link of like a really good blog or something that he's been reading, then I would read that. But more or less, I'm learning as I go along. Or I'm also, the guys I'm doing it with are like two very good friends, two Finnish guys, and they're in the same boat. So like we're learning together and realizing, and like just as we were in poker, we learned poker together and had like aha moments, like, oh wow, we should do this on the flop, on the turn, on the river. We kind of having the same things, I guess, in business as well.
Yeah, one of the things again that stuck out like a sore thumb with Mormon was his incapability of handling it all himself. You know, trying to play, trying to put in the volume, and also trying to handle all the money and all these different transactions and keep a track of everybody and doing it all himself in a kind of a haphazard way. How important is it that you're not on your own in this, and how do you spread the load?
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a shit show if you don't, like, if you're not really on top of it, it's shit show. Like, if you're not on top of it for, like, 1 or 2 days, the whole thing just collapses. Like, you need people in ways where... We're lucky enough that our guys are all kind of like smart guys, that we kind of, some guys, let's say they've had a tough time playing poker for like the last 6 months or so, we can sometimes like give them a job in the stable, you know? So like, we know a guy like went to uni and he did accounting or something like this. He's been playing for us for 4 or 5 months. He's been quite unlucky, but he's been trying hard. Seems like a nice guy. We can kind of maybe like ask him if he wants to work for us like 10 hours a week, you know? Pay him a wage so he's always getting money in his pocket. He doesn't have to ask for loans. His wife's happy, or his girlfriend's happy, that he's actually getting money like a wage at the end of the month. And that kind of like helps us spread the load out a bit. We have so many guys, like out of the 90 guys or so we have, or 70 guys or however many there is, all 70 have like a different story. They can all offer us something in some different ways, you know. Some of our more experienced guys coach some of our less experienced guys. So like, let's say there's a guy who plays $10 tournaments. There's no point of like me coaching him how to like win in $100 tournaments. He needs to learn how to win in like $10, $15, $20 tournaments. So the guys who I used to stake, who used to play those tournaments, they know how to win in those tournaments better than I do because they've played them last year, the year before, etc. So we kind of have like the top guys coaching kind of the guys towards the bottom, which that helps the workload straight away for But that's just an example of.
So let me get my head around that then. Are you saying that people come through the BitB staking process, if you like, you know, they join the gang, and then they get to a certain proficiency, let's say 100 NL, and then rather than just be a workhorse, you actually turn them around and teach them to be trainers at that stake? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. So we have 15 tiers, and tier 15 plays like $10 tournaments, I guess, $15 tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And tier 1 plays like $10,000 tournaments, EPTs, WSOPs, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows what tier they're in, and everyone knows what they need to do to get to the next tier because we give them the feedback. So a guy in tier 15 knows he needs to do X, Y, and Z to get to tier 14. And as long as he does that stuff, he'll get there. And we've had guys who've gone from tier 15 all the way to tier 1. And once they get to tier 1, they're obviously super accomplished. We're comfortable that they're playing almost exactly how we want them to play, and they know how to do it. And because they've had so much information given from us, they're able to replicate that information to the guys in tiers 15, 14, 13, because they've gone through those stakes. They know how to get out of those stakes. They know what to do to move up, and they know what we want as well, you know. So they can say, look, Patrick wants you to do this. If you do this, he's going to give you the confidence. And for the smaller stakes guys, it's kind of motivating to see that guys have actually moved up and through the tiers, you know. It shows them that like it is possible. It's not just like some bullshit, you know.
When it comes to the structure of your employee payroll, if you like, could you just explain to me how many people are currently within those tiers from 15 and 1? How many coaches you have that are separate to that? How many accountants do you have? What does the workforce look like here?
Well, it kind of changes all the time in terms of who's in what tier and how many players we have. I'm not sure exactly how many players there are right now. I'm going to guess there's like 70-ish. But like every day, someone will get taken on or someone may leave. Well, not every day, but like every week, let's say the turnover is like 2 or 3 either way.
Mm-hmm.
So the turnover in players is quite large. In terms of like who runs the whole thing, it's just 3 guys. It's me, Elmerix, and European, Tommy, Rook, and Sam Vusden.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a 4th guy called Fido Holtz, obviously you know him.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of helped bring a lot of the structure to the company. We were like good players and we had good methods. I think Fido kind of brought more like the business structure. It's like we used to just do all the communications on Skype, and then it would be a huge shit show. You'd have so many, let's say I'm talking to you now, like this conversation would get lost in another conversation.
Yeah.
And just straight away kind of saw the importance of having like an external communication tool. So we use like a communication tool where the only people on that server are the people in BitB Staking, you know, so you're not getting like your girlfriend messaging you at 11 PM, like asking you when are you coming down and like bothering you. You can just turn off Skype, turn off Facebook, turn off everything. So yeah, we have the 3 owners. Then we have like a mental coach called James Wittet, who's actually a good friend of mine from Budapest. I knew him for like 4 or 5 years, one of my better friends. And he was a poker player, but he used to always like, we'd be sitting in a bar and he'd always be giving me these like pills of wisdom, and he'd just be like super positive and had good, really good thoughts. And I said to him, have you ever thought of being like a mental coach? I have so many guys you could definitely help. And he came in and like most of the guys, like I saw you did an interview with Sick Hangover where he was saying about his like routines.
Yeah.
And he was saying that like James Wittet's like changed his life the way he sees things. So James is like a really integral part of the whole system. He's like a life coach. He's a mental coach. He helps people stay on the straight and narrow, I guess. Then we have a bunch of coaches like Dietrich Fast, Ben Heath, lots of guys, Stefan Sontmeiner, David Yan, all the kind of guys you see in like super high rollers. They're all kind of our friends. I'm good friends with a lot of them. And they come in and coach all of our guys and take a lot of the workload off us. And then we have a couple of guys who we have like a data analysis, like a German guy who kind of does a lot of tools and software and analyzes which tournaments are good to play, which are not good to play. He helps like build like maybe accounting systems, stuff like that. Then we have one of our players, Raymond, who works with us doing like general managing, like just the day-to-day stuff, like keeping everything in order, making structure, making sure the meeting notes are done, making sure we actually have meetings, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of like the whole.
It's just like it's like you've even gone, but you're way beyond like a startup. But like you really are kind of getting some traction. It's really interesting. My boy, 16 at the moment. He's decided to stay on to his A levels. Doesn't have a clue what he wants to do in the world. And he just said to me this weekend when I was with him, "Oh, what if I was a online poker player, Dad?" I said, "Oh yeah, give yourself another couple of years. But if that's something you want to do, I'll support you. You know, whatever you want to do." So tell me, Patrick. Let's just say he was 18 and he, you know, was welcomed into Bitbee staking. How would it work? Just explain briefly the process of the conversations you'll have with him and how he will be kind of like brought into this process and how he will know what to do on a daily basis and what's expected of him.
So we have like a development stable. So we have like a main stable, then a development stable. The development stable have like even more intense coachings, more intense. They have like a higher quantity of coachings and interactions. So mm-hmm. We don't necessarily look for guys with like an amazing result. We do look for like kind of smart young people, people who impress us with like a nice email. Like we have like an application email and questions and stuff.
Mm.
And sometimes you'll see people just like filling out one word answers, but sometimes you'll see like a really smart kid write a really nice kind of humble message, like acknowledging that he's not the best player right now, maybe, but he has a lot of hunger. He has like maybe a degree or something that shows that like he is intelligent or that he can stick to something, you know. And if he impresses us, then we will have like a Skype call with him, like feel him out, see him on video, see how comfortable he is, see if we feel like he can kind of fit into the whole kind of family that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
Then if he does impress us, then we'll give him a chance. We'll give him a schedule that he should play. He will get, he'll be in like a group. So he'll have his own group with maybe like five or six guys, like all the investors and like a few coaches who will be monitoring him.
Mm.
And whenever he has a problem, anything, he'll just message in this group saying, "Oh, hi guys, X, Y, and Z." Every few days, we'll message saying, "How are things going? Do you have any problems, etc." He'll have a learning path. So he'll have a mentor who develops a learning path for him to kind of go down. So you need to improve on this and this and this, and to do this, you need to go to this coach and this coach. And fortunately, now we've been in operation for a couple of years, so the video library is actually pretty big. There's so many videos from Fido, from myself, from Sam, from a lot of guys. And if, let's say, that you're struggling playing in big blind, there's going to be like 10 videos of how to play in a big blind or something, you know? So there's a good video library here for if they do get stuck to just go and search and do it themselves. If they still don't understand, then we have strategy forums, we have strategy groups, we have people doing like sessions on a daily basis together. The guys, they're all very motivated together. So there's just so many places for them and opportunities for them to learn. Basically, you'll get out whatever you put in this kind of community.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't really try very hard and you just hope to run well, then you're probably not going to do well unless you're very lucky. If every day you wake up and say, "How can I be a better poker player? How can I make myself as professional as possible here?" then it's very likely you're gonna succeed. Because poker isn't very tough. Like, people do say that it's tougher than ever, but I was reading a forum post from 2008 yesterday. It was on like Blonde Poker.
Mm.
And someone was doing like a question and answer session, and they said, "Poker is so tough now. Is it really still possible you can make a living in 2008?
Yeah.
And they were like, "Yeah, you can still make a living, but like by next year, it's gonna be virtually impossible." And obviously, like 8 years ago, the games were like hilariously soft compared to now. So people always say that poker's dying and it's so tough, but I really don't see it. On a daily occurrence, I see things which from very good players who make huge mistakes, that poker's going to be around for a long, long time, I think.
One of you referred to it earlier on, but one of the stable, Ashley Hunt, he did a poker routines interview with me last week, I think it was. And I asked him if he emulated, other players and looked up to other players. And he had a combination of players, and you was part of that combination. And he said one of the things that he loved about your game is your creativity. When you set up a structure like you've got with Bitbee staking, and you said there's these 10 core elements that you think that you could teach people and anyone with some savvy about them could be a winning player, how do you incorporate creativity in that? How do you teach that?
A lot of it's exploitation. So like, let's say you should have like a really solid game plan of how to play. Most players you're playing against you won't need to play this game plan against them because they'll be heavily exploitable. Like, let's say I went to Dusk Till Dawn and played a $50 tournament tonight. Like, playing like the 10 pillars of structured, well-balanced game wouldn't be the right way to play. You know, like, let's say you have an old guy who's very tight, then obviously you shouldn't play the same against him as you should play against like a local drug dealer who doesn't want to fold any hand. You know, like, a lot of my like exploit, a lot of my like creativity comes from like different ways to exploit people. So like getting the maximum out of hands against people who don't want to fold, or getting the making people fold hands who maybe like there's a guy who plays the first level of WSOP main event. The guy's like sitting there with his wife on the rail and his two sons. Like, there's no way he wants to bust in that first level. Basically, no matter what hand he has, if I go all in at some stage in a hand, he's probably going to fold because his whole goal is to get to the next level, you know? I think what I know best is kind of like realizing what people's goals are. Like, what are they trying to achieve when they're playing poker? Like, are they trying to end the day with a big stack, or are they trying to just make the next day, or are they trying to be chip leader or bust? Or if it's 20 minutes before dinner break, are they the kind of guy when they have a nice stack, do they want to tell their friends on dinner that they have the nice stack and they don't want to put it at risk like 20 minutes before the dinner? Little stuff like that, I guess, just being kind of dealing with so many poker players like I do in Bitly Staken, it kind of like has taught me a lot about how people think and people's insecurities and people's overconfidences and stuff like this. So that when I play now, I kind of realize how people think, because if I look at a hand history and someone does something really bad, I will say to the guy, like, why are you folding here? Why are you calling here? Why are you raising here? And they will give me their thought processes. So I've had like 80 different people tell me their thought processes for two years that I've kind of just like, I just kind of know what people think just from like not being a genius or anything, but just from like listening to people and like seeing how poker players think, you know. If you're staying in your room playing on Party Poker by yourself and you never speak to people and you don't question people, then obviously you're not going to know how people think, you know. You don't know unless you ask, I guess.
Yeah, I was reading something the other day, or I was interviewing someone, I can't remember what it was, and we all know that the way to get forward in the world is to pick something you want to focus on. We're talking about poker right now. And then find someone who's the best at it and I kind of hang around with them and learn from them, or a group of people, right? But it's really difficult, isn't it, to even begin? And who was I talking to? And he said what he would do is he would win at a certain level, like say 50 NL, Patrick, yeah? And he would seek out the other people who were winning at that level and go and talk to them, you know, reach out to them. And then he would go up to another level and do the same again. So he ain't just starting poker and trying to just ring up Patrick Leonard and say, can you help me out? And it feels like that works really well with Bitby Staking, where you're kind of breaking, you've got these 70 people and you're breaking them down into bite-sized chunks. So you've got like core groups of people who can really work together and get some theory going at their level. Does that sound about right?
That's exactly what happens, yeah. Like, we have, like you said, Ashley Hunt and Jack Hardcastle. They're, like, two new guys to the stable who are playing the same level. And they're both super hungry guys. And they're probably guys who've got a bunch of friends who are okay at poker but are not as, like, hungry as they are. And they come from two different groups in England where they would never end up being friends. But they know that in Bitby Staken is like-minded guys. And we have an application process where if a guy's lazy or if he doesn't really want it, then we won't let him in. So when they do come in together and they're both in the same tier, they're immediately kind of partnered almost. And they're like every day like challenging each other and pushing each other more and more. Whereas before they would log on to Facebook, maybe like speak to a few guys about hands, but it wasn't in like a well-structured manner, or the other guy wasn't as motivated as he was, etc. So yeah.
And you talked a little bit, well, you talked a lot here about the strengths of Bitby Staken. What are the weaknesses that could get in your way if you don't address them?
I guess like poker ending one day like is very bad for us because we're gonna have like a bunch of makeup that we just lose. So like one day the stable has to end, and if you have like 70 guys who on average, like let's say the average guy's in like 10k makeup or whatever, that means it's gonna be like 700k just one day like wiped away. And like if you just end the whole thing, you're gonna lose it. If poker just ends, you're gonna lose it. So that's like the end game dilemma of like how not to lose that $1 million or whatever, I guess. In terms of the players, I guess people leaving. So like we have like let's say a guy wins like 500k for us, and he has like 250k himself. he may decide that he just wants to go and play for himself and not play for us. So, like, we have to make sure the coaching is at such a high standard and a development standard. Otherwise, these players will just leave and play for themselves, because we've turned, like, good players into great players and okay players into good players. So if we don't keep the coaching at a very high level, then it's likely guys will leave and just play for themselves or get coaching from other people. The other leak is, like, maybe someone, like, being infiltrated in the stable, like having a mole who's, like, leaking info to people outside of the stable, then the other people get to see how we play. Like, I know that I made, like, a poker course, like, 5 years ago or something, and I said I only wanted to sell it to, like, 20 people so that all the information didn't go out. And then, like, 3 years later, someone messaged me, like, a Russian guy asking if I wanted to buy a poker course for $5. It was like, but God knows how many people actually watched that call. So, yeah, making sure the information doesn't spread too much is important, I guess.
Well, I think on that one, the fact that you're really trying to make Bitby staking like a family makes perfect sense. Because I guess the other, you want to kind of like grow like trust and loyalty within the brand, you know, and something to be proud of. And like Ashley was really definitely very proud he was part of Bitby staking, and that's like the way forward, I think. So I guess that is a part of my next question, I guess, was how do you, like, poker's full of scumbags, right? It's every day my Google feed is telling me about somebody who went to the World Series of Poker main event, got stake in, and then got too much of it, and now we can't pay it back. And, you know, like, real, like, people you see every day playing in the game, and the reactions to it is just almost like, oh, man, you fucked up, you naughty boy, don't do it again. And I'm like, this is so accepted. How do you stop that kind of rot from causing you problems in Bitby staking, like someone being in there winning a big score and saying I ain't paying you? How do you protect yourself from that?
I mean, a lot of it's like mutual respect. Like I said, most guys, like, let's say there's just an American guy who stakes someone online, he sends him the money, he says good luck, and then that's it. Like, we actually go on holiday with the guys. Like, let's say someone goes on holiday like 3 times a year. Like, they go with their friends, like, if they're a poker player, let's say, just like, I don't want to say a name, let's just say it's like a high stakes English poker player, and they stake some guys, whatever, but they want to go to, like, Ibiza, they want to go to, like, Australia, they want to go to Thailand, they go with their friends from school, you know? Like, we've kind of, like, immersed ourselves in it so much that when we go on holiday, we're going on holiday with the guys, you know? Like, we wake up, we have breakfast with them in Marbella, or we have breakfast with them in Budapest, or we go have drinks with them, we have heart-to-hearts. We're really, like I said, friends, and I think, like, people are less likely to scam you if they're your friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
If there's some guy who's like treat you like shit, and like he's aggressive towards you, he's asking you why you're not winning, but he's not helping you win, and he's being disrespectful to you and all this kind of stuff, then it's very likely that if you do win 100k, then not very likely, but maybe you think fuck this guy, you know? But like, if you have someone who's like really helped you go from like making $5,000 a year to making $200,000 a year, then you kind of like owe it to them a little bit. You're like, you're in their debt a little bit. But if you win 100k for someone who's giving you nothing, then all that 100k is your money. It feels like this guy's done nothing, like, this is my money, you know? But if someone else helps you to get to that point, you feel like, okay, like, I'm not entitled to all this money. Like, it should be shared, you know? Like, I've done half the work, they've done half the work, you know? I think in staking in general, in like stables, like, the scam rate somewhere between like 5 to 10%. We've been scammed once, or no, twice. There's this guy Edmund Young in England who unfortunately had some gambling problems, but he's actually paying us back right now, so good luck to him. And there's another guy who pretended he died or something.
Right.
There was some really fucked up story, but it was from Russia, and that was actually someone we probably shouldn't have taken on and stuff, I guess. So yeah, I guess maybe we've been scammed like once, but we get that money back. We're getting that money back at the moment. But then again, we've spent a lot of money making sure we don't get scammed. Like I said, we spend more money on, like, we spend more time, we spend more money taking people away, stuff like this. So like, maybe one guy gets scammed by 10% of his guys, but maybe he spends zero time and zero energy on them. Maybe we spend like 100% of our time and 100% of our energy, but we don't get scammed. You need to kind of like, needs to be somewhere in the middle, I guess, is the GTO kind of.
And the last question, where's the future with this, Patrick, because of course we're living in the greatest technological advancement in history of the world. Things are just you know, the technology is just advancing at such a fast rate. Are you ever going to consider selling this to somebody? What is the future of Bitby? How can you continue to improve it and make changes?
Not so sure. I mean, we kind of just think of today rather than tomorrow, I guess. Like, right now we have something which works really well, and like, we would never like consider selling it, because we'd never get like the right valuation price. So it's not going to just give us like $10 million, $20 million. We think that like poker is going to be around for a long time. I'm obviously involved very heavily in party poker, and I know that like poker, at least in party poker, is going to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger every day, every week, every month, every year. I think the future of party poker looks extremely bright.
Yeah.
And other sites, if party poker do as they continue to do, 888, Winamax, PokerStars, iPoker, they're all going to have to like get to the same level to stop party poker taking over, you know?
So, yeah, yeah.
For me, like the huge thing is not for like party poker to be the number one by far and all the rest to fail. And I don't think that's party poker's goal either. I want party poker to be number one by a tiny bit. I want 888, PokerStars, everyone else to be just slightly behind us.
Yeah.
That creates a very healthy ecosystem that everyone can kind of survive in. Because let's say party poker took over to a point where PokerStars were like 1 year, 2 years ago, like the business decision correctly would be to like increase rake, remove rake back systems, etc. You know, like that probably is like the business savvy decision. And for poker, that's obviously terrible. So for me, I want party poker to do amazingly well. I'm going to do everything I can do to make sure that happens. On a daily basis, I spend hours trying to make sure it's the best site in the world. But I also want like 888 and Stars and iPoker to do well too.
Yeah.
Not as much. And if that all happens, then poker is going to be around for a long time. Staking is going to be around for a long time. And we're all going to hopefully still be happy, I guess.
Well, Patrick, thank you for joining us today, and I wish you all the best at Party Poker, Bitby Staking, and I hope your heater continues as well.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Lee. Appreciate your time, and I'm a big fan of all your articles and videos and audios and everything, so keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You're doing a good job.